They're thin.
No, that's the drummer for GNR, Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, Duffy.
Duffy. I saw him the other night. And he was talking about this on guy that had Loveline, absolutely. And so he was, you know, recounting some of the craziness
from the GNR days.
But they had like this, I guess, cop entourage, because they had some nut that claimed that he had stolen his, like, you know, secret window, they had stolen his song, uh-huh. And he used to sing it in his truck driving to work. And they, like, used moon beams or something to steal it. And
oh, boy, yeah.
So they had, like, heavy security for a while. It was pretty funny.
Crazy.
He was working his way out from, like, Tennessee or something to find out.
Oh, boy.
Just have Axel breathe on him or something.
Oh, my God.
Oh, golly.
Okay, that's good. Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight it's Mark and Ian, and we're going to talk about the 2001 film that won Denzel Washington an Oscar, a little movie called Training Day, written by David Ayer, who has basically made a career out of writing and now directing all sorts of cop stuff, mostly about L.A., cop corruption. I think he did the one called Street Kings that we reviewed on the podcast about a year ago, Zach and I did. I think he was involved in Dark Blue. There was one with Christian Bale, Harsh Times, that I think he was involved with.
Did he advise on Dragnet? With Dan Aykroyd?
I don't think he was involved in the Dragnet movie. Which
the Pagans?
With the Art of Noise remix of the original Dragnet song, which I have and enjoy.
It was awesome.
Yes. For protect the Dragnet.
That might have been the last thing for Henry Morgan.
Maybe. Yeah. Colonel Potter.
I always loved him from Apple Dumple, blah, blah, blah.
Apple Dumpling Gang?
That'd be the one.
Excellent. We're not talking about Apple Dumpling Gang tonight. We're talking about Training Day.
We can't talk about Tim Conway.
He would have been good in this movie, Training Day.
I think he would have been.
You know, the only person that, I mean...
And Harris Yulin, we have to talk about Harris Yulin.
Yeah, but the only person that's really missing from this film, if they could have just found a place for him, like maybe he could have been the LT that oversaw this whole corrupt ring of officers.
The captain for 40 hours?
No, Brian Dennehy.
Oh, Jesus.
It would have been great. I would have loved it. He would have fit in so perfectly with this movie.
I'm telling you, bestseller. We need to watch Bestseller.
We will someday.
And The River Rat.
But we're not talking about that right now.
Corruption.
Yeah, we're talking about Training Day, which I think I laughed more watching Training Day than I did watching Observe and Report. I think Training Day is a funny movie.
It is funny.
It's dark. It's gallows humor, to be sure. But I love this movie. It's just, the first time I saw it was on satellite, like a handful of years ago on some Sunday when I was in college and I should have been doing homework, and I just, you know, Sunday afternoon, and you turn on the TV.
And you smoked a little PCP.
I got a little wet, and then sat down and enjoyed me some Training Day. It's just, it's such a simple idea, and it's all one day. It's just one long day for this officer who's trying to get involved in becoming undercover narcotics. And I mean, how does that really work? He's not a detective. He would be a beat cop, except he's saying, I want to be part of this undercover unit.
He's not a detective. He's just an undercover officer.
Yeah. Well, he's trying to become one. Right. And that's, I guess, how they go.
Well, the fast track, that's where you make a name for yourself. You make the big bus. You know, take down the big money.
And then, yeah. So, it's just clear that he's basically trying to make a good living for himself and for his newborn child and his wife and everything. He wants to climb the ladder as quickly as possible. So he's ambitious, but he's not corrupted, you know, by
that's
that ambition.
That's a crazy lifestyle. I mean, imagine any of the famous, the one that really pops in my head was the famous FBI.
Donnie Brasco.
Yeah.
I guess presumably the idea is you're an undercover officer for a while, and then at a certain point...
Joe Pistone.
At a certain point, you get your big bust on whoever or whatever, and then what? Then you become a regular detective and you still work? I mean, you would think that your ass would be grass at that point if there were any collateral guys that were part of whatever unit you helped bring down, you know? You'd have to go into witness protection or something.
I believe there's still a $1 million hit on Joe Pistone, and that was back in the 80s.
So what is that? How does that get resolved? I mean, does Joe Pistone... just not give a shit?
Well, I guess he just doesn't go to premieres. You know, go hang out at Starbucks.
But I mean, but does he hide his identity? I mean, the point I'm trying to make is that, like, in this movie, it basically, in Training Day, it basically says, okay, yeah, you're an undercover narcotics officer, and you bust a couple, maybe you make a couple big busts, put a couple big guys away. And I can see it being in the context of this small drug dealer situation. But, I mean, if you bust, like, a big mafioso guy... there's no way, you never get everybody.
No.
And so, I think your life is kind of over at that point. Like, you know, you're not going to continue, you know, I guess you're using a false name when you're undercover, so...
Well, I think that was Pistone's major issue, and he had a lot of hard feelings, I think, towards the FBI, because he felt like they used him, and, I mean, literally his life... Well, I think things worked out for him in the end. I'm sure he made some money off of his fame, but...
Well, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, we're getting kind of sidetracked here.
He got to be interviewed by Bill Curtis. I mean, what else could a guy want?
Hooray.
Hooray.
So it's Ethan Hawke as the rookie cop, and it's Denzel Washington as the 13 years on the job.
Pre-Uma breakup.
Yeah, and he's schooling him, basically. It's just his first day. He's teaching him what to do, what not to do, what he needs to know. And it's,
man up.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story because the way things are unfolding, you're seeing that he's opening him up to this new world. And the way that happens, it's like you're on board for a while. For like maybe I would say almost the first 45 minutes or so, you're kind of following what's happening, and you all, I mean, he's doing some crazy shit. Don't get me wrong. The Denzel Washington character, Alonzo, is putting him through some things. But, like, the thing about, like, the smoke and the PCP. Now, you told me that when you were involved in security, the guy told you, you know, your boss or whatever told you to spray yourself in the eyes with the pepper spray, right? Because it gets around. It's something that's there. And so it's part of the job. Like,
I don't think anybody expects you to smoke PCP.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think I got the impression that he was testing him in that sense. He was saying, let's say you're in a situation where, as an undercover officer, you need to test a drug. And he basically tells him. And who's to say how pure it's going to be? They might fuck with you. They might put something like that in there with it. So, you know, figure out how to do it. And then even when they bring him over to Rogers, who, now I never could quite figure out... He mentions a pension. This is Scott Glenn that plays Roger, the drug dealer. But I get the impression that like he was like a semi-disgruntled retired police officer. Do you get that impression? Because he talks about a pension.
I thought
it's
kind of hard to... It's kind of hard to figure out whether he was a police officer or whether or not he had just always been a drug dealer that was cooperated to a certain extent with the LAPD.
Maybe.
In order to operate, and just got left on the sidelines.
Well, the reason I think that he's involved in the system is because of the way he talks to Alonzo, like as if almost like he worked with him in the past.
Well, he probably did.
Yeah, on some level, exactly. But then when Alonzo mentions the three wise men, it just seems like as the that wouldn't be something the drug dealer would necessarily be familiar with, but... I mean, you could take it either way. I'm not sure it's particularly important. Basically, what you do understand is that he was slinging his dope so that way he could eventually move to the Philippines, you know?
Retire 1 year away.
1 year away.
He should have left. Fucking greedy.
And, I mean, there's a lot of things going on in this movie that you're sort of told about, but that's not entirely... I mean, usually the whole telling and not showing is a big flaw, but in this case, you kind of give it a pass because the movie isn't about Alonzo. I mean, he's the main.
It's about Ethan Hawke.
But it's about the training day for this one character going and what he kind of goes through as they try to corrupt. I mean, it's very extreme. What's going? What I mean,
With the Sandman.
With Sandman, which is Roger. And
no, Roger wasn't the Sandman.
Yeah, he was.
No.
Who was the Sandman?
We never see the Sandman.
I thought that they
said Sandman was freaking... oh, shit. What's her name? With the really awful voice.
Macy Gray?
Yeah, Macy Gray. That was her old man, and he was in county.
Oh.
So he knew the Sandman wasn't there, so he went and, you know, bust up the place.
Shook him down, stole some money from her just for the fuck of it. Because I got it confused.
Not just for the fuck of it. He needed that money to buy the arrest warrant so he could get the $1 million.
That's right. That's
like he said, like he told Ethan Hawke, he had that day completely planned out from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And either Ethan Hawke was going to come along or he wasn't. But he had, every contingency planned for.
Except the bathtub. He didn't make sure the bathtub was clean. He was like, make sure the bathtub's clean. So he had to make sure that the bathtub was clean.
Bathtub was clean.
The bathtub was pretty well clean, yeah.
Their shower curtain was cleaner than yours.
That's for sure. I'm replacing that. I'm replacing that shower curtain like within the next 6 weeks.
That's good.
Because it's done for.
Shit, nope. I had a salamander in my bathroom today. I was like, how the fuck did that get there?
Well, at least you don't have mushrooms growing in there, huh?
No, no mushrooms.
I mean, there are all kinds of fantastic actors in this. All three of the
wise men?
Of the gang members. I don't know what you call them. The Latino gang. The vatos. That he's playing cards with. Those guys are all, like, from all kinds. It's just like with the mobster movies where you see all the Soprano guys and all that stuff. They get reused a billion times. Those guys are for the same thing for the L.A. gang movies and stuff. But you get the same thing from these other actors. It's an L.A. movie. It's not a New York movie. There are different kinds of cop movies, The French Connection.
Or like The Wire, or like Homicide on the Street, Life on the Street.
Well, Homicide and The Wire are both Baltimore, yeah. So each one is its own world, its own politics and demographics. They have precincts in New York, and they don't have that in L.A. The way they have, like, departments or divisions in L.A. It's different. But,
I think they have precincts in Chicago, too.
Yeah. Really, it's just, like, such a simple movie in terms of what happens, The guy goes on and then... goes on this...
I was pretty confused the first time I watched
it. Yeah, I mean, it is confusing. Like I said, I still couldn't follow who the Sandman was, but it almost kind of doesn't matter because there's a lot of stuff that's not resolved in the course of it because there's a lot going on. I mean, Alonzo has got a lot of things on his plate. Like he says, he's got a whole bunch... He's got 63 cases...
He's got his dimes.
...pending, and he's got, Yeah, exactly.
And his four sons.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if that was really five sons, or maybe who knows how many sons?
Yeah, who knows. We only see one of
them. Since we never see the... Well, I mean, I think... at the end, with the newscast...
Yeah.
Didn't it say father?
It said four, yeah.
Right, so he's got at least five.
Yeah.
Because we never actually meet the wife.
That's true. We don't meet the wife.
Did you ever watch any of the special features, deleted scenes, any of that?
Off Training Day? No, I haven't checked any of that.
But some of the deleted scenes are pretty interesting, and there's this one where he takes him to some house and just kind of looks at it, and he's telling the story, and you can tell that it was kind of a painful story for him, and it involves a dog, and I can't remember everything that happened now, but it, I think his partner, his training officer was like this old white racist guy or something like that, and just gave him a whole rash of shit. But you kind of, when Scott Glenn is talking to him about, the fact that Ethan Hawke looks just like he did.
Or acts just like him.
Acts just like him, and...
He really mentions it himself. That Alonzo says it himself. He's like, just like me. You got the magic eyes. You know what's going on, and you can tell that.
Doesn't really know what's going on.
But in a few moments, Alonzo is impressed.
He's a good cop.
Impressed by Hawk, and
he definitely wasn't a pussy.
He feels like there's definitely a sense of regret. And Alonzo's behavior a couple of times where you can just see that he's like, oh, if only I could go back to when I was like you now, the things I would do different, and that I wouldn't be into the Russians for $1 million. I wouldn't have turned into the kind of guy that would beat some guy to death in Vegas who apparently... Well,
some guy like him would be smart enough not to do that, you'd think. He must have been loaded.
That's where that whole, like, bit of just being... It's one big, like, clump that's just told.
Well, it's kind of like Tom Berenger. It's like, how could you fuck up that bad?
Yeah, exactly. Those guys are all just in it for, like, a split second, which is crazy.
There were some deleted scenes that they were in.
That's possible.
It's not possible. I watched the.
Well, no. I mean, in terms of the there was more story that really would have involved them.
It was the same story. I mean, they just kind of
rehashed it again. So they were deleted for a reason.
There was a little bit of resolution, but
okay.
Now talking about them, and I can't remember. We got Tom Berenger. We got Harris Yulin.
Yeah.
You know, don't get high on your own supply.
Yeah, that's right. You fucked up too, Mel.
He fucked up too, Mel. Yeah, that's too bad, cockroach.
And then the other guy's been in some stuff.
Yeah, well,
he was the senator on the X-Files. The
X-Files, but he usually plays a... I think he was in Falling Down. I think he played Robert Duvall's boss in Falling Down.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Kiddies out there, join up.
Yeah. I mean,
he could become a firefighter.
Yeah, should have become a firefighter. I like...
Him and Mel Gibson.
Yeah, I like Ethan Hawke's character in this. He's a good guy, and I like that it's sort of all... works for him in the end. I mean, you know, the fact that he was a good guy is essentially why he doesn't get killed.
He was just a little bit too good. I but then again,
well, you
want to like him, but
you,
I mean...
Yeah, you do. I mean, I think in the end you do like him. I don't think that... but I don't know, what do you mean by he was a little too good? Do you think that in real life he would have taken the money and just shut up, or...
I think that would have been a lot smarter. You're not going to do much good dead.
That's true, but you're also...
It's like in that scenario, you really think you're going to make it out that you're a rat right then and there when there's five heavily armed cops on the take committing murder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, good old Dre, you know, motherfucker's a fed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, well, that's some smart reasoning.
Uh-huh.
If he was a fed, then he'd be fucking wired and all you fucks would be in deep shit at that point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's... Oh, like you said, there's confusing parts. It's a lot going on. It's not a perfect movie, but I really do enjoy it. The tension that happens in the intense scenes is really good. There's some great action. The behavior of the characters, or the acting, is all really great, really exciting, funny.
There really wasn't any weak...
No, there's no weak scenes. There's no boring parts, because it's so quick. I mean, it's only 2 hours. Only 2 hours. It's a full 2 hours.
It's a very full 2 hours.
But it feels like
more than one movie.
Yeah, it really does feel like a lot going on, because it's like the whole day, and then all
Because
kinds
really,
of shit goes on.
Roger feels like the conclusion of the movie, but then you end up with this whole other story.
Yeah, but I don't think it's one of those cases where, like, I don't know, like, Casino Royale is the big one, a recent memory, where there's, like, three endings, where it's, like, it literally fades to black, and you feel like, okay, I guess that's kind of over. Return of the King is similar. I don't quite get that feeling with the Roger. I know what you mean, like, that's the big, kind of a big, exciting part.
Well, he's giving him the speech, and you just kind of imagine things wrapping up, but there's really... a lot happening in the rest of the movie.
Oh yeah. But it the way it's paced, the way it's structured, I mean, I think is just fantastic. And the way that you slowly stop liking Alonzo, stop seeing because
well,
it's
he
not
brings
like
it he... back. He brings it back. And the first time you watch the movie, you don't catch the bathtub.
Well, you don't necessarily know what that means.
You don't know what that means, and I guess if you were really savvy and paying attention, you'd catch that.
I think when I first listened to it, it flashed in my head, because it's the whole, you know, how do you want to get rid of somebody? Well, you just put him in a bathtub.
I really wanted to like Alonzo.
Yeah, I did too. The first watching, I was still on his side when he was beating up Snoop Dogg and when making him puke and when he ganked the money from Macy Gray.
Because he's cleaning up the garbage.
Yeah, exactly. You know, He's taking care of business.
He's making the streets safe.
And
that's what we pay him for.
He's like the great... I him and haw about what kind of hero and whatnot. Alonzo is clearly an anti-hero in this movie. And it's just... It's that obvious.
He's not a villain.
Well...
He's pretty villainous.
Exactly.
Smiling,
don't respect
I won't
him.
Shake his hand.
Yeah, I won't shake his hand.
He's
fuck that shit.
He's a ruthless Vato. I like that.
Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of character that is. I mean, you know, he operates within the system, and he's got control over things.
He's completely outside the system. But he's driving around his fucking office, fucking his dimes, making more kids, fucking drinking and smoking weed and PCP.
On the job. Well, he doesn't smoke PCP. He's never been wet.
Well, we don't know.
But he meets with the three wise men. The system is what the system is, and it's just thoroughly corrupted.
Yeah, and LA needs to knock that shit off because they keep getting busted for it.
Well, and that's...
It's like LAPD had this great gang prevention squad, and they were really making a big difference. I mean, they were actually changing things. It was getting a lot better. And I think this must have been around 2000. Might have been right around the time of this movie. There was a huge scandal, and there was a lot of corruption, a lot of money, shit like that, and the whole thing got shut down.
Well, that's the thing. You know, David Ayer won't have movies to make anymore if the LAPD cleans up their act. Because they're almost all about corrupt or, you know, that thin blue line of where have you gone too far. And so, and that's what this movie explores to a degree.
Well, you know what's crazy with American Gangster? That New Jersey cop, and I can't remember what his name was supposed to be, but played by Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
Sort of a Serpico kind of thing. That whole bust, I want to say, took out like a quarter of the... Oh, shit, it was hundreds
What was
of
all the Josh Brolin assholes and stuff? Yeah.
But it was, you know, it was immense. The corruption was just immense, and... took down hundreds and hundreds of officers. It's like a quarter of the drug task force in New York.
Yeah.
And, but that was early 70s.
But what I like about this movie is that you have the Ethan Hawke character to show that there are good guys that will, you know, fight the good fight.
But what's he going to do now?
I don't know.
Is he going to sweat in a hot black and white all summer now and cut parking tickets?
I think that he, in an inadvertent way, he got... He brought those guys down.
I think he needs to move to the other side of the country is what I think.
Well, we'll see what happens with the three wise men, see? That could be very interesting in terms of...
Oh, for Training Day 2?
For Training Day 2. I would be interested in his story to see what, like you said, what does happen next with him. Does he end up basically becoming... Not becoming Alonzo?
We're coming up. We could do Chronic 3000. Yeah. Or no, Chronic 2010.
Yeah, sure. But, like, I would be interested to see what... happens next for the Ethan Hawke character, like you said, if he eventually succumbs to full-on corruption, or because you know, you get the sense that there's a lot of it that he'll let slide.
Well, I'm thinking he's not going to be a cop anymore is what I'm thinking.
It's possible, but they don't give you that direct
because how do you go closure. Back to
is there a deleted scene or alternate ending that conveys something like
there
that?
There is an alternate ending, but it doesn't have to do with him. It has to do with the three wise men.
Oh, okay. It shows them get taken down?
No.
Okay.
Why would they get taken down?
I don't know. Maybe the evidence.
That's the thing. If Ethan Hawke tries to take them down, that could be problematic.
That would be interesting. Yes, which is why the interaction between them and him would be an interesting idea to explore.
He doesn't have any evidence. He doesn't have.
I know.
Any video
he doesn't have any evidence. I know, but it just. I'm
He's
not.
Just got a whole bunch of bloodstained cash.
Yeah, they're scared because they got a little wet on that one too. You know, they got a little taste, and so there you go.
I mean, I guess he could go run to the FBI, but really, I mean, honestly, if you were in that position, who would you know to trust? I mean, really, could you trust anybody? Because who knows who's wired into what?
That's why that's such a frightening situation with like
really
police officers.
Be.
Yeah, because it's...
And not only that, even though Alonzo is corrupt, it's a blue line.
Yeah.
You don't open your mouth. It doesn't matter what you see. You don't open your mouth.
Which is where he was pretty much at, which is... Until Alonzo turned on him.
That was the crazy thing again about American Gangster. The story starts out with this cop who's kind of a scumbag. He's got, you know, runs around his wife and he's got some problems, but he thinks of himself as being morally superior and he won't stand for any corruption. Mm-hmm. So they stake out this, this bag man and end up searching the guy's trunk and there's $1 million in cash.
Yeah.
And $1 million in cash, I mean, this is like the 60s. I mean, that's a fuckload of money. And he turns it in. His partner begs him not to turn it in, but he turns it in nobody on that department will work with him after that because nobody trusts him because he's that fucking honest.
Yep.
Because nobody in their right mind turns in $1 million. So that's how he ended up being his own boss, sort of. Running his own thing.
And that's probably what would maybe end up happening as a potential thing.
His career as a police officer is over for the most part, I would say.
No, but you just cited a situation where that same sort of thing happened, and it wasn't over. So, I mean, you know, anyway, I'm just saying that I would be interested in another story, but, I mean, it wouldn't be the same kind of thing, because really, the hook, the thing that everyone remembers about this movie, the thing everyone loves about this movie, the big award for this movie, was Denzel Washington's stellar performance, which is awesome just performance. From... The moment you first hear him, you don't even see him. It's the telephone call, which is such an interesting way to like bring in this like big character. Is it the first time?
What's funny is when you watch it the second time, or you know every time after, you're wondering what's going through his mind when he's talking to him. You know, you have a backup gun, anything like that.
Yeah,
he's feeling him out from the very beginning to know what he's up against.
That's true,
because he needs to know whether he's got a holdout piece. You know, just in case, mm-hmm. later on in that day.
That's absolutely... And then how he's like, no, I don't have one, I just got this. And he's like, okay, no, that's great, that's fine. You know, at first it almost sounded like you should have that, but no, I don't
well,
have it.
Well, shit, Alonzo's got, like, guns stashed everywhere.
Yeah, he's
everywhere.
Got something like four guns
on
him.
He carry four, he's got another one stashed in his car, he's got a shotgun.
The shotgun on the swivel underneath his dime's bed, yeah.
His dime's bed. Oh, we didn't even talk about Eva Mendes.
Yeah,
that
just
was a pleasure.
Kind of quick. She's there for a bit here and there. Not a lot to it. But
classy wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
Nice summer dress, just like Gans likes him.
Yeah. I really like this movie. I think I give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Oh, absolutely. It was a trip. I mean, not too many movies rock your world, and I wish I had seen it. At the theater, but I didn't. I rented it. I probably saw it a couple of years
ago. I don't know if it would have been as effective in the theater. I mean, it's so intense. And
no, I just hate blowing $9 to watch shit.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. But I mean, it's the theater viewing experience is a communal experience, no matter how you put it.
I'm tired of the communal experience. I always get these guys, they have to sit right next to me.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah. So it's always like you're a little... In your own bubble because you're so self-conscious of the fact that there's other people there and that it's this place that you've entered and then you're going to leave. And so watching a movie in the theater...
There could be a fire.
It's tough to be completely relaxed and completely
some
cool.
Some people don't seem to have any problem with their fucking cell phones.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course. There's a handful of garbage about that. But I'm saying, like, the first time I watched it was when I was living down in Southern California... You know, like in the middle of some balmy spring afternoon, and that was the perfect time to watch it.
Did you go searching for Neto's corner?
No, I didn't bother with that.
Korea, little Mexico's finest.
No, I didn't want any of that. Not at the time.
That part it was really good. I mean, I think it was because of the Papa Roach.
Mm-hmm.
I really got. Some sad, sick satisfaction out of watching those college kids
get busted,
just get their, you know, worlds rocked, you know, have guns thrown in their faces. They're not used to that.
Nope.
But really, you know, it's kind of like, why are you here? You shouldn't be here, and stay away.
Yeah, the way that it's shot. You see the girl in the back, and the way that she looks at Ethan Hawke a couple times, you always feel like there's something going on there, like she recognizes him or knows him or something.
That'd be kind of an interesting concept if he busts some people he went to school with.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but it's not there. It gives me a moment's
It
pause.
Is designed that way. I mean, driving the lime green VW bug.
The new bug.
The new bug.
Especially in 2001, it hadn't been out for very long.
No,
it had been out for maybe
3 or 4 years.
Man,
I think Mandy Moore did a video that was all her driving one of those around.
Probably, yeah. Before she could drive, when
Before
she was like
she
15
drive,
or something.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, you got to give it up for this movie. It's pretty difficult to find any real... I mean...
If there was one weak point, one weak... performance, it would be Dr. Dre, in my opinion.
Yeah, Dr. Dre is, it's kind of like, why...
But they kept it pretty light.
Yeah, why did they throw so many, like, of those people
because
in there?
Because you did the song and soundtrack. Well, I thought Snoop Dogg was great.
Snoop Dogg was good. Snoop Dogg was simple. I'm surprised they haven't, that he hasn't done more stuff in that realm at this point. I mean, yeah, he played Huggy Bear in...
Well, he played...
Starsky and Hutch.
He played, oh, shit, Bones?
Yeah, no, I think I know what you're talking about, but I don't really know.
I think that was the first thing he did.
Murder Was a Case.
That they gave him, yeah.
Yeah,
he didn't even pull the trigger. I thought his bodyguard did.
Well, who knows?
I can't remember. It was some
bullshit.
Because I think Snoop was always a lover, not a fighter.
Exactly. No, there's some zany parts in the movie that are pretty heavy-handed, like action set pieces that happen and stuff. But so it's not wholeheartedly entrenched in realism.
Unlike what?
Well, like Ethan Hawke getting the shit beaten out of him, and then Denzel leaves him rather than killing him or something. I don't know. But not even that so much as the fact that then he just decides to jump. Like three stories onto his car
too, but
after
didn't...
he's gotten the shit beaten out of him. I mean, it's not that it's completely unrealistic. I mean, though it sort of is. It's just that it's like an insane thing in an otherwise sort of dramatic, real type movie. And there are a few bits and pieces here and there, but it's an action cop drama.
Well, I don't think he didn't have a gun.
Yeah,
he didn't have a gun until he got in his car, so he would have had to throw him off the roof. And he looks at his watch and he says, fuck it, basically,
yeah.
And I'll take care of it later.
Well, he could have beat him. He could have Russian beat him to death like
he
did the
Russian
guy. He
beat him pretty good.
Yeah, he did.
And then Ethan beat himself pretty good when he jumped on the car.
Exactly. So, I mean, I give it a 4.5, which is probably one of the higher ratings I've ever given any movie, because I really do enjoy it. But I'm not saying that it isn't without moments that could make some people roll their eyes. I mean, but at the same time, I'm not one of them.
There was nothing, well, you know,
I'm not sitting here
about Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about, you know, he's like, the only checks I cash, LAPD,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Right, yeah, right.
And it's like, could you be this fucking stupid?
Uh-huh.
Do these guys look like they go to church every Sunday?
But the reason... That's totally intentional, and the reason I have...
Right, because he's a fish out of water.
Because he's a fish out of water, but because it's also all tests. He doesn't know what's test and what's not a test half the time. Because that was before they killed Roger. That was before they killed Roger.
But at the same time, he saw... I mean, think about it.
Yeah, but
They jacked the Sandman's girlfriend or
yeah.
wife or whatever.
Well, he didn't necessarily know what happened.
They're
there.
Having a shootout on a neighborhood street.
Yeah.
Basically for robbing somebody.
The escalation is perfect.
There's no warrant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some dirt. He already sees quite a bit of dirt.
He sees the dirt, but he's not so naive that he doesn't believe that, you know, these guys are 100%.
And not
free.
Only that, but he's listening to the conversation with the three wise men.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows something's up.
So, I mean, yeah, but I don't know. That's why it's just such an interesting story because of that training aspect, I think. It's like, because you never know what's going on. If you're a fish out of water, you don't really... You're not the
no,
one.
That's why you're supposed to be trained, because you don't know what's happening.
Exactly. And this guy, and then to have it be not only that it's this guy, but that it's this particular day in this guy's
anybody
life.
Anybody in their right mind. Yeah. Well, you know, that's a tricky thing, too.
Because I think Denzel.
You didn't know you smoke a PCP. It's like,
yeah.
Smoke a little weed to show the boss that, you know, I'm not a complete, you know, piece of white bread from the valley.
Well, it was also he basically. I have no problem with that scene because he makes the point. You want to be an undercover cop, you have to be able to handle doing a little drugs. You can't be like, no, I don't do that. That's no.
Which is kind of bullshit, too, because if you got the money, you know, fuck that. I would imagine drug dealers don't, I guess it depends on who you try to...
You never know. You got to be able to cover all your bases, you know? It's like you got to be able to speak Spanish and all those other things that he's talking about. And then you get that he speaks Korean or something at one point when he's in that with this scene with Snoop Dogg.
Why are they Korean?
I think because they're not Spanish. I think it's an Asian woman.
She's not Chinese?
It's Chinese. I don't know. I just got the impression that it was something like... Yes, he's speaking Kamba, Korea, China, Japanese to this woman. He's speaking the language from Waterworld, basically.
Hmong? Is he speaking Hmong?
Yeah, he's speaking Hmong.
Sweet.
It's the kind of thing that if you watch before you go to sleep, you're probably going to, like, have trouble sleeping because the intensity is so high in those last couple of scenes where, I mean, just that scene with the Vatos
that's pretty intense.
Is crazy scary and intense.
It is scary. That's the other thing. I mean, it's like, I suppose at that point, you could really say that he was in a state of shock to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
But a gangbanger asks to see your gun. You don't hand it to him.
Alonzo's giving him the sense that these guys are all his CIs. And, you know, in order to work within this world, you have to have their trust. You have to have, you know, they have to like you or whatever. And so, you're right. He's also in the state of shock, too. He's just tired. He's not thinking that much. He thinks enough. He doesn't give him the gun with any ability to do anything, you know. So he's at least thinking that much. But I think he's just kind of being a badass, and he just doesn't want to belabor the point, you know? The other guy already pulled out a gun, which basically implies, hey, look, I've got, like, this.
Right, exactly. So if I give you my gun, then you guys have all the guns, mm-hmm. and I don't.
Exactly. But it's maybe one of those, like, well, I'm not afraid of you, which is a mistake in this case. He should have been. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know what the circumstance is there. I think at that point You just decided that it's time to go yourself, I think.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. I'd be like, well, I think it's time for me to go. And then find out how things, you know, what happens next.
Well, I was thinking too, as they're standing there holding that magazine, he's got two more on his belt.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just one of those things that you'd want... You'd want to do everything just super fast and super slick, and that probably wouldn't happen.
Nope. It's the way it goes.
Because if you're ever, you know, ever in one of those crazy situations, which will never actually happen, but if you were in that crazy situation, you'd want to think that you wouldn't do something stupid or that you'd be able to find a way out. But more than likely, you're in over your head. So far in over your head.
Oh, yeah.
He's a police officer. Well, he's been a pig for 19 months,
mm-hmm.
and he's way, way, way in over his head.
Yeah, but he survives it. He does what's right,
luck.
And he makes
it. He got lucky.
He did get lucky, but, I mean, he made that luck.
It goes to show you, man. It goes to show you, pay up in the karma.
Uh-huh.
The karma account and might save your ass someday.
No, I was thinking about that when we were watching it. I was thinking about that whole thing with him preventing the rape. I mean, yeah, you're right. It's the karma thing, but is it like a deus machina thing, or is it just it's just a coincidence? But the point really is, I guess, just that he was a good cop. He saw something going down, and he decided to put a stop to it. Like, what is the most fundamental element of being a good citizen in the first place? Even, you know,
right? Any good citizen seeing some crackheads raping a 14-year-old girl should step in,
put the kibosh on that thing.
But most people wouldn't.
And so there you have it.
It's
vindicate.
That's a scary thing because our society doesn't tend to reward good Samaritans.
It doesn't. Which is why.
We sue the shit out of them.
Which is what I like about the theme in this movie. Because really, if there is a theme, it's that you know, if you're a good guy and you're a good cop, you get shit on, and stuff will happen. But you know, maybe there's a chance you'll make it. It's not just like all the corruption is terrible. I mean, this movie could have been colored very differently if Ethan Hawke hadn't won at the end. If Denzel Washington won at the end, it would be a completely more nihilistic, cynical movie.
I don't know if I'd watch it again because it'd just be too much of a...
Yeah, it's real stuff. It's disturbing and it's upsetting, but it's, I mean, you don't watch every movie with a cop-out excuse of, oh, this is bullshit. Sometimes, like, movies like Training Day or, like, Full Metal Jacket, you know, they have parts that are legitimately upsetting, that are bringing up real issues, and that makes it high art, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, absolutely, but in real life, there isn't a score.
Yeah, I know. I know that it's contrived as well. You know, that's what makes it art also.
Absolutely, it is art. It's art with a message.
It was pretty straightforward.
Was it like Ferngully?
It was just like Ferngully. No. Okay, well, that's probably a good enough place as any to put the podcast to bed. If you want to reach us, you can send us an email at futilepodcast@gmail.com. You can go to the website and leave comments at www.graniteseed.com/futilepodcast, spelled granite, like as in pomegranate, sans the pom part.
Alan, send us your movie ideas.
Yeah, send us whatever.
We might have somebody, have an inside track and get this shit on the road.
Well, I don't want to get involved with that. I don't want someone to send me an idea that's similar to something I am working on and I get sued 10 years from now. Fuck that shit. No, write us a review on iTunes. Search us out, Futile Podcast. Search us out at Podcast Alley. Subscribe. Let's try to bring the listenership up, because we've been doing this for about 2 years and we're having a good time with it, but it'd be nice to know that there are people that enjoy it, or if they kind of enjoy it but don't quite enjoy it, maybe tell us what they'd enjoy better, because we want to bring quality to you. We're doing the work, and if we're doing like a 70% job and there's a few things we can do to make it
better. Oh man, we broke through that red line a long time ago.
Maybe we can make it better, But yeah.
Two red lines?
There's multiple red lines all over the place.
If a picture is worth 1,000 words, what's a film worth?
Well, there are 24 pictures a second, so you could do the math and determine that the longer movies are worth a lot.
What about digital films?
HD films?
HD films.
HD films are 28.99 or something if it's in the US. Video is more frames per second.
That seems really slow.
24 frames per second?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's fine.